You live in a small town. You want to support a local bank, correct? You want to give your money to a local bank. I've seen the movie It's a Wonderful Life too many fucking times. When you got one guy and you know his name and he's in charge of the whole bank, I don't give a fuck if it's my brother, cousin. I'm not putting all my eggs there, man. But when it comes down to your real money, you better have two or three big banks. Have a couple big banks. So if the shit hits the fan, you may lose some money, but you're getting 250K back.
Entertainment purposes only. You'd be an idiot to listen to anything these degenerates say. Invest at your own risk, do research, but seriously don't listen to these ass clowns. Now enjoy Cash Daddies.
Welcome to Cash Daddies, where banking fatties. Sorry about taking off last week. Howie had some personal stuff, but at the end of the day, it all worked out. The guy's gonna be okay. Yay, Howie's friend. So, anyways, Howie got sick, so he's a little sick right now. Please welcome to the show, Howie Dewey. How are you, Howie?
Beautiful, baby. Beautiful. Feeling great.
You
best
look
day. Best day I've had in a week.
Yeah. What happened to you, Howie? I've had a cold. What's your deal?
And Johnny Woodard, everybody.
I'm here. Well, what's going on? We're like the walking wounded here. What's your...
Dude, God, are you still sick?
Yeah, I mean, I just got it yesterday, yeah.
Dude.
Or two days ago.
No, you've had it for a week.
Yeah, whatever I caused, the worst shit I've ever had, man. This is like... It's been a week. Literally left to go see my buddy in the hospital, came back, went to do a show last Wednesday with Bernstein, the fire. And I'm like, buddy, listen, I don't want to be a dick, but I don't think I should be breathing on this mic. I feel a little off. The next day, I felt like a truck hit me. And then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, got worse Monday. Today, I almost went to the doctor yesterday. Today's the best I felt.
Yeah, I feel a lot better today, too.
Nasty flu.
Just my voice is still
snowing in New York City, man. It's snowing.
Really? Right now, it's raining. Like, this has been the craziest run of rain that we've had in L.A., and it just gets chaos out there.
That's good, right? You guys need that.
Yeah, we do. They talked about how, like, all of our rivers have filled up since the last couple droughts we've had. It's kind of great.
Well, if you hear them, they'll say, like, we don't need water until, like, 2098 or whatever, you know? And then I guarantee you 2 years from now, they'll be talking about how there's a drought and we desperately need rain.
Yeah, but, like, last year, all the natural resources were almost gone in California. It was just burning fire every day. You know, I mean, I thought California was history.
Yeah, everyone thought we were going to fall into the ocean.
Including Warren Zevon.
We're still here, hanging and banging. Anyways, the economic situation seems to be crumbling everywhere. How are your thoughts?
You know, it's really amazing what you hear. Then you do the research and you talk to people that work in banks and you find, and you know, this news came out Monday, or actually it came out Friday, last Friday is when it came out. The SVB, Silicon Valley Bank, which is a bank, and let's be clear, it's a bank which 95% of all the reserves are corporate startup tech companies. They're not normal Joes like you and I. You don't have your bank account at SVB Bank. So basically, what that means is that 95% of all the deposits were over $250,000, which, you know, the bank goes under, it's SIPC insured, you get your 250 back no matter what the fuck happens. So these guys had problems. And basically what they found out is that this was really regionally specific. These guys that ran this bank were really fucking up. They didn't have a risk guy in there for like the last 9 months, which is unheard of in a bank. You know, a bank has to have somebody overseeing everybody else to make sure that they have enough reserves, that they're invested in, they're not taking on interest rate risk, which this guy basically had something like 80% of their money in 10-year bonds making 1.5%, where you know, treasuries are paying 5% right now on a 2-year. So they really fucked up at this bank.
Well, have you seen the guy that ran that bank also ran one of the banks that failed during
Lehman? He came from Lehman Brothers.
Yeah.
Lehman Brothers.
Unbelievable. This guy should never be allowed near a bank ever. He should have to keep all of his money in cookie jars.
So one of the main advisors, the chief officer at fucking SVP came from Lehman Brothers.
Yeah.
Which blows my mind. I mean, the amount of the amount of red flags that SVP had was just unbelievable. They didn't have a risk officer there from April to January. The, like you just said, that dude came from fucking Lehman Brothers. And they had all their money in basically in low interest returning treasuries.
Why would they do that, Howie? Is that typical of a bank? Why would they do that?
Well, no. Banks definitely hold treasuries going out 10 years, but they also hold 2 years, oh, 5 years. You know, a bank is just like you or I. Look, you look at Bank of America at Chase, and I always say this. Bank of America used to be known, it was a joke. Their biggest holding was Coca-Cola stock. So these banks invest like you or I. It's a hedge. It's a hedge against inflation. Look, banks don't lose. This bank was run so poorly. Banks don't lose money, man. Banks don't worry about deposit. Bank of America, that's my thing. Bank of America, you're ever going to see a run on a large bank because they've been kicking the stock market's ass for 50 years, 60 years, 70 years. The market does 7-8%. Bank of America is doing better than that. They got guys in there trading on a daily basis. That's what they do. I was talking to a Patreon the other day, and he said, you know something that's really weird? I said, what? He said, Wells Fargo sent him a letter last week. This is a bank right
this
to
is a, nuts.
This is a bank to a T. Wells Fargo sent him a letter and said, you know, we're so glad that you bought a house through us, that you mortgaged a house through us. We're very, very happy. You know what we'd like to do? We'd like you to give you a home equity loan right now. You know, your house is only worth $500,000. But, you know, you're such a good customer. We normally would give you $250,000, but we'd like to give you $500,000. You know? Why the fuck you think they're doing that? Because interest rates are at an all-time high right now. Of course they want to give them as much as they want to overextend this motherfucker.
Yeah, I mean, it's just ridiculous, right? Yeah. They're trying to get him to take a loan.
Yes.
Yeah. So I put this out the other day. Like, I'm like, you know, whenever you're feeling sad, just know that somewhere out there, somebody's eating Subway still, right? Yeah. So that's my whole opinion is it's the same thing. There are people still banking with Wells Fargo. Still banking with Wells Fargo. Like, what do you need to go, hey, man, maybe this isn't the best place for me? Like when they made phantom accounts and charged people money because they defaulted on those accounts. Literally, their customers. They fucked everybody. And now they just had something where people deposited their checks and their money didn't show up.
Well, I mean, it's not. I think it's more banks than Wells Fargo, but Wells Fargo is the poster child for just thievery. I mean, this dude, hardworking guy, buys a house, and he's nice enough to use them and pay them interest for the next 30 years. And what do these fucks do when interest rates are at an all-time high? I said to him, I said, were they sending you letters 2 years ago when rates were down at 2% to get another home equity loan? He goes, no. I just started getting them. Of course you did. Rates are at 7.5%. They love nothing better than to get a nice loan under your name for $500,000 at 7% for the next however many years. That's a bank for you. Banks are there to fuck us. That's what they do. But look, I had a lot of Patreon people. They were like, Howie, so what do you do?
Patriotic or Patreon people?
Patreon, patriotic. On Patreon, who the fuck knows? But look, it's a big question. You know, what do you do? I mean, you live in a small town. you want to support a local bank, correct? You want to give your money to a local bank. Look, man, I've seen the movie It's a Wonderful Life too many fucking times. And when you got one guy and you know his name and he's in charge of the whole bank, I don't give a fuck if it's my brother, cousin. I'm not putting all my eggs there, man. You know, here's a few bucks. I'll support you. But when it comes down to your real money, you better have two or three big banks. Have a couple big banks. So if the shit hits the fan, you may lose some money, but you're getting $250K back.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really, and this is why I want to talk to our guest who should be here in about 15 minutes. I'm thinking about, should I pull my money out of my bank? I have a bank. Obviously, I'm at Chase. I mean, I'm within the FDIC coverage. But the question is, are they going to have enough money to cover everybody? Are they going to be able to do that? And then, like, how long will it take you to get your money? These are the questions.
Well, Chase, you're all right at Chase because Chase fucking just bailed out with SVP. Chase just gave him, I don't know how many billion dollars. I mean, I'm sure it's at a nice interest rate. That's what they, you know, they didn't just bail him out. They're charging him interest.
Well, sorry, correct me if I'm wrong though, Sam. You're worried that the federal government won't be able to insure your deposit, right?
Well, they're talking about how much the FDIC has and what the total bailout would be if the bank system failed.
But what's a dollar going to be worth, you know, at that point?
That's
anyway?
My own once thing. The whole system so, collapses? Like, what are we going to do? How are we going to pay our bills? That's, and like, I really don't like getting into this future tripping thing, but you know, obviously I have PTSD from Celsius and I'm just going to be like, oh my God, bro. If I just get my bank, all my crypto taken and my bank account,
which there was some news on that a couple of weeks ago. Did you see that they reported that they wanted to accept an offer from an asset manager that would take them out of bankruptcy and start the process of paying people back. At first, they would pay back people who had less than $5,000 total invested. That wouldn't work for us, Sam, of course, but those people would be out. And then the other people would be offered a combination of their coin back. They'd have to hold it, though. And then they would also be given some equity in the company. Now, whatever that's worth.
Here's my whole take on this SVP and the other bank that shit the bed to. I truly feel down low. Fuck them. I'm tired. They should not get bailed out. Screw them.
Yeah.
Look, anyone individual like you or I has a few bucks in there, we get paid first, baby. Because we got that $250,000 SIPC insurance. Pay us. As far as those startup tech companies, they had 5 mil, 10 mil. Hey, buddy, go fuck yourself. There's a reason you were banking here versus Citibank, Citigroup.
What was the reason, Howie? What was that?
You know, it's a loyalty thing. I'm sure this bank with the scumbags that run it are reaching out to these tech companies saying, we'll do this for you. We'll give you 75 basis points off of your next loan. They're definitely dangling meat in front of them for that shit. And my whole thing is, you know, the Fed came in and said that everyone's going to be met. Fuck that, man. I screw them. Let them rot.
Well, one of the stories that came out of this, Howie, that I didn't quite understand, and you touched on it earlier. You're seeing now that people saying, I saw something like Market Watch too, that treasuries could be the impetus for the next, you know, financial crisis. And I don't quite understand why they're a hedge against inflation. Like you said, they're designed that way. Why, how could they possibly be a problem? I don't quite understand that.
I don't think they will be because, you know, rates eventually are going to come down. I think there's other things that will be more of a risk, like commercial real estate. That's probably going to be the next one. They're talking about that today because nobody's going back to the office. to buy commercial real estate is cheaper than it ever has been. I mean, these small banks, and I'll throw a question out there, Sam. If there's one company in the world that you think's going to just dive right in, dig their fucking fingers right in the SVP. If you had money to bet on it, who's just licking their chops saying, we can make some money here? Who is it?
Howie's homies. No, Goldman Sachs.
What's your even better favorite when the net?
Oh, BlackRock.
Blackstone's already making bids on SVP. And I'm not making that up. That's a fact. They're already
Howie, I don't like to get too conspiratorial here, but if you watch Alex Jones, he just had a whole thing that I personally, Howie, and I know I like you're more in line with Brian Callen. We had a discussion on this recently, but just like a lot of this seems like a controlled demolition.
I mean, we'll see. I mean, it's, a lot of these guys are in bed together. The biggest thing today, and no one's really talking about this, and this is fucking huge. There's three rating agencies on Wall Street, and they rate bonds. You know, if a company starts shitting the bed like Delta Airlines and they have B-plus bonds, Moody's will come in and say, no, they got problems. I don't have faith that they're going to repay their bonds. Let's drop them down to junk, which is C-level, C-rated. Moody's came out today, and they downgraded the whole banking system. Not small banks.
I mean,
they downgraded the whole banking system from stable to negative. Now, what I found was odd was they did this, and, I mean, banks were down so much yesterday, and I want to apologize first for the patrons, because I watched it so closely yesterday, and in my back of my mind, I said, you need to go in and buy some of this shit just for a 1 or 2 day trade, because we're going to get a dead cat bounce, which we did today. Shit was back up. Banks were back up 40%, the small regional banks. But literally, Moody's came in, downgraded the whole U.S. banking system from stable to negative. That's not a great thing. I mean, will they be able to fix this? Probably. But still, you don't want to see that, man. You don't want to see that. There's
especially when they're late to every party, you know? I mean, if they're saying it now, it's already bad.
Yeah, it's right. Beyond bad. And, dude, I mean, so, you know, we can get into this a little bit, but it's like this whole, like, all these guys like, yeah, the banks are going to fail, man. You should go get your money out. And now everyone runs their bank, pulls out their money, and now we actually see these banks having runs on them. It just seems so contrived. And like people in my world have been talking about this is coming. I mean, we just had a woman on Tim Fall Hat, Winnie Webb, was just talking about financial collapse. I mean, she was saying within 2 years. She didn't say a week. But it seems to be slowly but surely hedging that way.
Well, you know, go in the opposite direction, they have been saying this for just decades and decades and decades. I mean, it was way worse than the 70s. 70s, we were like, everyone felt that was it. It was all these banks are going on, and rates were at fucking 20%. But I do feel like the guy from the CEO from Charles Schwab came out and he said, listen, no, anyone can go and look at our balance sheets. They have trillions of dollars. And I believe him, because I've been watching the way these big guys have been fucking people for the past 20 years. They have money. They have billions of, they're not stupid. The big guys aren't stupid. They have hundreds of these risk officers that every day they look at the balance sheets, you know, and that was a problem in 2008. Because a couple of these big guys like Bear Stearns,
Goldman Sachs,
they were too deep into these mortgage-backed securities. So we'll see what happens. It wouldn't surprise me. I think especially the small regional banks, there's going to be a lot of regulations implemented, which is it's probably going to hurt these smaller banks because they don't need that. But that's what's going to happen. They're going to start regulating the shit out of them. And, you know, and I'm not saying don't put your money with a small bank, because, you know, I knew a guy, I used to have a guy when I was in the business, one of my investors, and you know what he would do? He would go to like 10 small towny banks. You remember Sam and Cortland? You had like Cortland Regional Bank. You had like Cortland Apple Bank. Yeah. You had five or six little tiny banks. And he would go to each bank and he would open a small savings account, $1,000. And he would buy a couple shares of that bank. And every year he would just buy more shares of that tiny little shit bank. And he was smart as shit, because what happens eventually to all these little tiny banks? They get bought. They get bought by Wells Fargo. They get bought by Bank of America or Chase. And then the stock doubles or triples. And that's what he did. So, you know, I think this was we'll probably see a few more of these have problems, the small ones. But I don't think it's going to happen. There's bigger things that are going to – I think commercial real estate's in deep shit right now. I think that's the biggest problem.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, like, everything's going online sales, which I go to these malls. I'm like, why isn't this place packed? And it's just like people like to order online. And then you just take a look at, like, podcasting or, like, all internet. Business is done from home now. I mean, it's in deep shit.
Well, and not only that, Sam, to your point, everything's done online. It's like my girlfriend the other day went to CVS to buy, you know, her vitamins, this. CVS doesn't have anything. They don't keep anything in the store anymore. Shoplifting, you know, this, that. So what is she orders all her shit online now. I mean, so that's got to crush these companies. I think in the long term, it's got to hurt them.
Yeah, for sure, bro. I mean, dude, this is crazy. Walmart shut down all of their Walmarts in Portland. There's no more Walmarts. They shut them all down.
I didn't see that.
I mean, are you surprised? They don't even allow them in LA, so I'm not surprised that they're pulling out of Portland. They're hostile. The people in those cities are generally just hostile. They don't shop at those places.
Well, it also has to do with so much stealing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, on the flip side of that, a couple of these states, Texas, Florida, a few of these big states, passed laws where if you're busted shoplifting with a crew, you're seeing all the smash and grabs. It's crazy. If you get busted, you're like, I think it's like minimum like 5 years. They definitely have upped the, and that's what they probably need to do everywhere.
Well, they sure as hell can't keep doing what they're doing, which is decriminalizing theft. I mean, that's obviously not working.
I don't know what was the if this is a real story, but somebody, like, there was one law enforcement person who was trying to make it illegal to charge somebody under 25 with murder.
What?
Like,
that doesn't even make sense. That'll never happen. That'll never happen, right?
It's just the dumbest thing I've ever heard. It's like, dude, you do not stop crime by making crime illegal.
Okay, it's in Maryland. It is a real story. Maryland Democrats bill, Democrats plural, it's more than one, would block people under 25 from being charged with felony murder. Okay, so there's a different, they get charged with something, just not felony murder. Maryland Democrats are pushing a bill in the legislature that would prevent anyone under the age of 25 from being charged with felony murder. Democratic, I don't know what a DE, what delegate, I guess, Charlotte Crutchfield introduced the Youth Accountability and Safety Act. Boy, that sounds nice, doesn't it? Which would prohibit a person younger than 25 at the time of the offense from being remember when 18 used to be you were a man now under 25
kind of when they sent you to Vietnam to die
from being convicted of first degree murder under the state's felony murder provisions. Under those provisions, murder is classified as being first degree if it was committed during the perpetration or attempted perpetration of several specific crimes such as rape, arson, robbery, burglary, carjacking, and other serious offenses. But with Crutchfield's proposal, which has the support of several Democratic co-sponsors, this is the kind of shit, by the way, that makes the Democrats look like idiots. Anyone under the age of 25 who murders someone while trying to commit one of these other crimes could not be charged with first-degree murder, a crime that in Maryland carries life imprisonment with or without the possibility of parole. If the bill passes, you're going to have kingpins, you're going to have gangs. This is someone against it. I just want to see someone try to explain why the fuck this is happening, why they would propose this.
Like, there's a couple crimes you can't come back from. Murder, rape and child molestation.
Well, now what they are saying is, I guess if, but this is not, this just seems like a terrible solution. They're saying that like if you accidentally kill somebody during a robbery, that that shouldn't be counted as murder. But that's, I mean, that's a terrible idea. Proponents of the bill say that the human brain is not yet fully formed until the frontal lobes, until 25. But yet we're doing other things in the General Assembly, letting children vote earlier and earlier and letting them get hormone-inducing drugs to change their sex.
Yeah, once again, just the hypocrisy of progressives. Oh, they're not responsible enough to be charged with murder, but they're responsible enough to vote at 16 and also cut their dicks off.
Imbeciles.
Yeah, they're stupid.
Total morons. By the way, can I just say Bitcoin has loved whatever's going on lately. A huge day yesterday. It just soared. I got a notification like, hey, it's up 6%. It was great.
Up 25% 2 days.
Yeah. It was, I mean, in 1 hour, it was up 6% yesterday. That was the biggest jump it had made in an hour since like the old days of Bitcoin. If you, I think you have to go back almost a year to where it was even close to this high. Like, oh, I'm sorry, that big of a jump.
Yeah.
In an hour.
Crypto,
I think it's at like 25 right now. How is that right? 25?
Yes. Yeah. Had a good couple days, good bounce.
24.9. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we'll see what happens. A lot of people think it'll go back down. A lot of it's going to have to do with the CPI number next week. The CPI number came out today, was even, but whether or not the Fed raises rates a quarter basis point next week, you got a lot of people saying they're done. Because they're worried about this bank thing. Of course, they walk down to the Wall Street. They go right down to the pit today. They ask all the traders. The traders like, no, hell no. They're going to raise rates again. And those guys usually know. That's the thing. Wall Street knows, man. Wall Street, that's, you just got to watch Wall Street to see what's happening. And that kind of dictates what's going on in the world. You guys saw today. I don't know if you saw the market was cranking up like 450 points. And then Russia shot down one of our drones over the Black Sea. And within 2 minutes, the market went down to like, and I'm like, holy shit, is that serious? Then it went back up to 100. Nah, I guess not.
All right, guys, we'll tell you about our friends over there at Copy My Crypto and our good friend, James McMahon, everybody. That's right. Guys, we've seen so many people make ridiculous money from crypto. But did you know it's easy for you to do the same? The Copy My Crypto membership site shows you the coins that YouTuber James McMahon personally holds and allows you to copy them. It's like having a big brother who knows what he's doing. You don't need to know a thing about crypto or how to invest, as you simply do as he does. So let me tell you more about James. He runs Crypto with James YouTube channel, which despite heavy censorship, has over 26,000 subscribers. Since March 2020, he's told his viewers to buy 26 crypto coins. Had you put $100 into each, it went on to be worth $123,000. Of the 26 coins, his top pick of the year, called Phantom, went up 692 times from when he said. That's one call. That one call alone has retired a number of people, including guys in their 20s and 30s. Remember, this is public knowledge. You can go to YouTube and verify this yourself. If you'd like to join the 2,800 members who copy James, then stop what you're doing and head over to copymycrypto.com/Sam. That's copymycrypto.com/Sam. That's S-A-M. You'll find the proof of everything we've said, but my listeners get full access for just $1. Once again, that's copymycrypto.com/Sam. The recession is here, guys. You can suffer like everyone else or choose to thrive. James is the real deal. Go visit the site now. All right, very excited to have him on. You've seen him on Tinfoil Hat a bunch of times, and I'm very excited to have him back. He has a wonderful podcast called Grand Theft World. Please welcome back to, well, for the first time, Cash Days, Richard Grove. How are you, Richard?
I'm doing well, Sammy. Hi, Johnny. Hi, Howie. How's your day going? What's going on out there? Is this the Market Crash Daddy show?
Yeah, this is the Market Crashes Daddy show. So we're getting into it, having a lot of discussion. Very excited to have you on. You're from the conspiracy or the truther world or whatever you would like to call that group. I'm glad you're here. Our friend Howie Dewey here has a different view of how Wall Street wants to act and react, and that, you know, there's this group of people that just think like sometimes the markets just get away from these people. We just don't understand what's happening. And it, like, I come from more of a world that a lot of this is controlled demolition, set up to fail, to grab more money and particularly more power. So what are your thoughts about everything going on?
I think that they knew about Silicon Valley Bank a couple of weeks before they let the public know about it. And you could see evidence of that. You could see that they've printed more money in the past couple of years than they did in the entire history. So it always reminds me of that scene in Goodfellas where they get Paulie to invest in the restaurant. He's like, what do I know about a restaurant? But then they get the restaurant and then they run up the credit and then they burn it down and claim insurance. And for them, the insurance in this case is get rid of small local banks and go to the central bank digital currency, which has been their plan for several years now, but now they're making it a thing. And juxtaposed to the pandemic where it just crushed all the mom and pop businesses and crushed a lot of people's economy personally, they're going to be coming out and making offers to trade your Federal Reserve notes that are becoming quickly wallpaper. And you can get some social credit points from Chase, JP Morgan, Citibank, one of these, you know, places over there. And it's Grand Theft World.
Yeah.
I agree with you with people knowing that this, I mean, I don't know if the government knew this was going to happen. Somebody knew this was going to happen because over the past 9 months, SVP insiders, people that worked there, the ass clown from Lehman Brothers that ran the place into the ground, insiders sold 81 million shares over the past 9 months. Come on. I mean,
well, just the CEO sold like 3.5 million shares just a couple weeks ago and cashed out.
That's jumping shit, baby.
I can't believe that's acceptable.
Peter Thiel, people are bitching about him, but actually Peter Thiel saw the writing on the wall last week and said, get your fucking money out of there. Peter Thiel jumped ship. He sold a shitload.
It's like, you know, controlled demolition of the economy that's in line with their want to go to a digital, trackable, traceable, databaseable type of currency system. And using technology, where's that? Using technology to transform geopolitics is the cover of this month's Foreign Relations, Council on Foreign Relations magazine. And they have a lot of foreshadowing in their cover articles, if you look at them over the years. So them saying that there's technology in geopolitics and there's a bank in the graphic, right? It's like a microchip going over a bank. And it's their hat tip toward the central bank digital currency that, I mean, we did a conference on it probably a month ago. It was a bunch of influencers that came together for solutions on CBDCs. And you have to look at it as creating a parallel economy that you can go back and forth because you might need that social credit system to transfer yourself internationally at some point or something like that. So you might want to be able to have some money that's coming in a traditional agorist barter type of fashion, not using Federal Reserve notes, but also be able to keep a foot into the world. If you needed something to do with family members and the official system, you would not want to be excluded like you're having to live off grid and hiding in the woods.
Well, Richard, real quick, before we go any farther, can you tell our listeners who may not be familiar with you a little bit about yourself and your school that helps people take control of their finances and their whole way of living?
Yeah, I mean, I started out like everybody here. I went to like school, public school. In my case, I went to university for 5 years. I got a degree and that did not help me in success in the world at all. It was a big waste of time, money, energy, attention, resources. But during the journey going through college, I bought into an entrepreneur system that taught us sales, marketing, hiring, firing, these sort of useful skills. I ran a small business for a couple summers. I sold it off to my brother. And I went into the job world having official sales training, knocking on doors, experience, closing deals, customer satisfaction, all these things that people entering from college didn't have this experience. So I rapidly excelled at each job I went into, and then from each job got recruited into a next higher paying, more lucrative job. And so the skill set that I learned during college that was really valuable was from me taking $5,000 on loan, investing in myself to buy equipment to run this house painting business, right? It was part of Student Painters is what it was called back then. And then translating that into the business world, and I was doing really well. I used the skill set that I had learned from that franchise to earn $1 million before I was 30. And that was one of my naive goals back then. I was like George Bailey from It's a Wonderful Life. That's my favorite movie. And $1 million was a lot in the 30s or 40s or whenever that took place. For me, it went by like in 4 years. And I thought I was kicking it. I was doing good. My paycheck, my bank account said I was doing well in the world. I knew better than my parents at that point. I didn't have to listen to them anymore. A bunch of naive, stupid things that, you know, go on when you rapidly excel. And then I ended up running up against corruption, a type of corruption that could adversely affect the markets and all the publicly traded companies under this mandate. You guys remember Tyco International and Anderson Accounting and those big scandals that went on at the beginning of the century?
Yeah, Anderson, yeah. Which is now Accenture.
Yeah, right on. So in 2002, Congress said we need a law that prevents this from happening again. It was called Sarbanes-Oxley. And it was an audit trail capture mechanism so companies couldn't cheat through email and they couldn't delete documents, this sort of thing. So I went to work for a software company that sold one of the two products in the market that all these companies had to buy one of the two. So it was my company and IBM. So they had a choice.
What was it, Sun Microsystems?
Now, my company was called Legato. It got bought by EMC and then EMC got bought by Dell.
Yeah.
So I'm in these meetings. So my, like 2 weeks into this job, I'm in a meeting with the general counsel from Tyco International. Her name was Valley. And I said, we've got this solution. You guys are under FBI investigation, SEC mandate to preserve documents. Here's how we're going to take all your email and all your documents and put it into a write once, read many storage drive, worm drive. And she says, I don't want to know how to keep these documents. I want to know how to delete them and make it look like they were never there. At which point my tech rep is like, you know, talking to their tech, we could talk about that offline, this sort of thing. So I was like, oh, that seems really weird. That, like she would be that straightforward at a boardroom table. So I was new and naive, but these people were basically like gangsters. And
are you talking about Tyco International, the one?
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, man.
Yeah, at their headquarters. Their general counsel had just, she said in the meeting, cooked the books for this other pharmaceutical merger, and that's how she got the job there. I was like, she's very open, right? So like a month later, I'm down at the National Association of Securities Dealers, NASD. They're watchdogs for the stock market, but they need this software too. I'm in the pitch meeting. And their guys, they had two guys in the meeting, the names don't matter, but they say to me, hey, there's a backdoor in this product. And right here in this staging, people can delete documents and make them look like they're never there. So now I had this Tyco International meeting and I had this other meeting and I'm putting two and two together. So I start raising concerns within and I get immediate retaliation, all sorts of shenanigans, like people calling my clients and having them pay on personal cards. And it was a highly like, so they're trying to set me up to get like hang me out to dry. So I end up calling the attorney from the SEC who was already investigating my company. And I said, hey, I'm familiar with your case in California and you guys have these things going on. I'm seeing something similar here. And he says to me, did you know we could put you in prison for sharing this information outside the company? And I was like, whoa. So 4 or 5 days later, I blew the whistle internally, according to Sarbanes-Oxley. The product I was selling had a whistleblower provision that I was mandated to train clients on. I then followed by the book, check the boxes, senior vice president of legal, senior vice president of human resources. And then they put me like in a limbo zone for 2 months. And then 6 years later, I had to represent myself pro se. I went through court. I proved in court that the day I blew the whistle, those people that I blew the whistle to that were supposed to be my protectors by law ordered my termination that day without investigation. They weren't interested, right? So I felt my company was ripping off EMC during this multi-billion dollar merger. And I was trying to warn EMC. Legato's cooking the books. There's all sorts of shenanigans going on. But I came to find out EMC bought Legato because of those shenanigans, because they're so profitable. And then Dell bought EMC because of such things. Now, when that's EMC...
What Debbie Kozlowski was doing over at Tyco.
Yes. Yes. Now, my question for you, since you know Denny Kozlowski, is his wife in the Crocodile Dundee movies, or do they just have the same last name? Linda Kozlowski. I'm always wondering.
Fucking looks just like her, too. Dude, so... Denny Kozlowski, who till this day, I mean, I don't know how many years he did. I think he got like 20 years and maybe did three. I don't know. But this crook, this talk about cooking, this guy was breaking every law that you could possibly. Not only was he doing that, he was embezzling hundreds of millions of dollars. And I do give him credit for this. He was taking the money and just throwing ragers on islands. He threw a party. And I want to say he spent 50, 60 mil on a party. And he had Jimmy Buffett. God. Jimmy Buffett was like the band.
Yeah. And he had art and he had like gold toilets. And there was a bunch of extravagances that could have tipped anybody off that there was something funny going on there.
Yeah.
But the thing that triggered the law after that, I mean, the law just ended up covering up for those things and putting us in danger of the 2004 to 2008 financial crisis. Because all those subprime loans, where's all the emails? Where's all the behind the scenes of those crooked deals that ripped people off? There was never any prosecution. And I'll give you another example. This preservation of email under Sarbanes-Oxley would have applied to Hillary Clinton and the 12,000 or 12 million emails or whatever she, you know, all that sort of stuff where they're like, we can't find the emails. How can the government not have a similar or better process than you mandate for publicly traded corporations as far as multiple redundancies of long-term storage so that records can't be messed with?
You make a good point, man. I mean, and that's crazy because I remember when that law came out and everyone was like, okay, finally, we're going to get some honesty in the corporate world. It got worse.
It got so much worse, man.
I mean, I'm thinking of all the companies, WorldCom, Enron.
Yes. Okay, so I had those as clients. And I mean, Enron, the Enron evidence got destroyed in World Trade Center 7 on 9/11. And so there were all these accounting frauds, all these sort of things. So when I blew the whistle, like one thing you do when you blow the whistle is you burn, in my case, a multi-million dollar career. Can't go do that stuff anymore for them. And it gave me the world's greatest education on how the world works. I call it $1 million education because that's at least what it cost me to get this education. And representing myself pro se in court against a multi-billion dollar corporation whose owner was an ambassador to Ireland and Cheney's biggest fundraiser.
Well, why couldn't you get a lawyer?
None of the firms would go up against the people that I was accusing of RICO and human. One of my clients was DynCorp. And then I find out DynCorp is doing human trafficking, and then there's already SEC all that stuff, right? So it got strange for me real quick. So I'm putting myself through court pro se. I had to learn all the rules of court. I go up against a multi-billion dollar law firm called Skadden Arps. They send in these lawyers that are like 6'6 and 6'8. I'm 6'2, but they definitely had the intimidation factor, psychological factor, but my evidence wins the day. Okay. Now they wait 9 months to tell me how I lost the case and how I never could have won and statute of limitation, whatever the, you know, bullshit they made up after 9 months. But in court, I proved that when I blew the whistle, the people doing what I said they were doing were doing it. The people I blew the whistle to ordered my termination, which has a 2-year minimum prison. You know, there's supposed to be protections for whistleblowers. It definitely aren't there. It's an early warning system for those people to cover their ass. That's exactly what it was and proved to be in court. Yeah. That's a valuable lesson for me going forward. But I'm going to court. I went to the first day. I did 8 hours testimony. I come home. I'm reading this book called House of Morgan by Ron Chernow. I was just trying to get my mind off the case, trying to relax, right? And I read in there that J.P. Morgan and Company was doing hostile takeovers, and it made their white glove WASP law firm of Davis Polk and Wardell very nervous. So JP Morgan needed some hitters, right? So they went to Skadden Arps, Marr and Flom as their heavy hitters. And I'm like, shit, this is like 100 years ago. These are the people I'm in court against today. And they helped the government cover up BCCI and Iran Contra and every dirty deed. Like they got quite a resume, right? Elliot Spitzer's wife works there. There was a whole bunch of stuff that happened through that. So I'm learning as I go through court. I can't go back to that career. I started reading about who are these people that are the non-elected rulers. I started finding tons and tons of evidence. So in 2006, I started podcasting. Now, I didn't know of any podcasts. I just knew I had a lot of content, like long form MP3s. And this was a way to upload them and people could get them. And then I did that for a couple of years. I got an online community together like the year after that. And then we just kept growing and growing that and reading more books. And I taught myself filmmaking and we made a couple of documentaries and stuff along the way. And then I came to like the 2013, 2014, 2015, we wanted to start a family. And I'm like, I can't start a family with a $15 a month subscription. You know, if you have $1,000 or multi-thousand dollar problem, it takes too many subscriptions to kind of fill that gap. Right. So I called upon my entrepreneur skills, the things that made me successful back in the day before my career got crushed with my naivete. And I said, I need to put a really strong offer together to the market. And I already had 2000 note cards that were to be my autonomy course. But you know, when my wife got pregnant, it was a time to like, okay, let's get those cards, make them into slides and let's start making offers to the public. And now it's, we're going into season 9 of autonomy. It's a 12-week training course and it bridges the gap between what we need to know to learn and survive and thrive in the world. But, schooling dropped us off a couple stops early. Right? It's not schooling does something. It's not education. It's indoctrination. So there's a gap to be filled. So we teach people critical thinking, creative problem solving, how to get through paralysis analysis, learned helplessness, all these things that hold us back. And then I add in the super entrepreneur skills that I learned back in college in that franchise that made me so successful. And then by the end of 12 weeks, you've got people with an anti-fragile mindset with skills, experience, and practice, because we do a lot of practice in our dojos. And they're working out with other students. They have competence, confidence, opportunity, skills, so they can go to the market and actually get some success going for themselves. So it's like bootstrapping for adults who have already been through high school, college, job world for the most part. But the students range from, you know, under 18 with parental, you know, hanging out with them while they're doing it, to all the way through my oldest student's 85 and his dad was Einstein's partner. So yeah. There's a broad spectrum of people to be serviced by the course. And we teach about 100 people each season twice a year.
That's nice, man. Now, where are you at? Where are you located?
Hartford, Connecticut. This is where my wife's family was from.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
We met in New York City. She worked at Oracle. She was in sales at Oracle. I was in sales. We were hitting, you know, it was the high life in New York. It was the best years of New York City. And then, you know, we got out before it got crushed. And we got crushed along the way, but we
I'm right in the middle of it right now.
So. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Snowing. All right on. I lived on 87 and Riverside over there.
Okay. Yeah.
So, Richard, a big part of this show is getting people to realize that they can take control of their lives, take control of their finances, take control of their careers, giving them a little nudge to go in the right direction. To be sure. Like, you just got to like set out goals. And so like if someone was starting today and someone, let's say they're working a job, they're making ends meet, but that's it. They got family, they have dreams, they're not happy where they are and what they're doing. What are your suggestions on where they should start on how to just turn their life around? Because, you know, listen to you and your story. It's incredible. I know my story. I was broke till I was 43. And then the blessings are I practiced certain things in my life that changed my life. And even over the last years, I made even more changes that have really allowed me to excel. But if we wanted to start somewhere, what are your thoughts?
All right. So the gist would be, let's start with people with zero or less than zero, because those are the hardest cases to work with, right? So the first thing you can do that's free is get your mindset together, get some goal setting together. Because if you can't do mindset plus goal setting and a discipline to get it done, all these other things that help you go faster, they're not going to help, because you need to learn how to take steps on your own. Some people have like self-confidence issues, or they feel the need that they need to be invited. Oh, how could I ever do XYZ? I don't have a degree for that. Oh, really? That's an interesting observation. How long has that been holding you back in life, right? So to triage people, which is something that we do every season, because there's some people that just got divorced or just lost their job that they didn't think they're going to lose. You know, they need a little balance. So we work on mindset and goal setting for the first couple of weeks, and that helps people get oriented and then start to identify where they're getting in their own way. And then every week we just, you know, let's take a couple of these things out. What would it be like if every time you tried to do a task, there wasn't some voice in your head saying you're not good enough or whatever the thing is that people carry around from a young age because they were told that by a parent or a teacher or a bus driver, whatever, you know? So teaching people how to get out of their own way then opens their opportunities up. And then we teach them sales, which is high value problem solving. Now, the exercise in a dojo we use, the Bridge That Gap, is we have new students. They need to meet each other. But I also need to teach them how to do interviews, because if you can't do an interview, you can never get to a sales skill, because it's solving a high value problem through a conversation, making an agreement to go forward. It's a very simple thing, and it doesn't need to be pushing or persuading or convincing or conniving. And so a lot of people cringe for sales until they find out, oh, it's just problem solving. I do this all the time. Exactly. So learn how to meet and greet people, how to have an interview. And then we add on a conversation about what are we going to do next and when are we going to do it? And it can turn into a sales skill. So it's a very gentle incline from just like, you know, a global meet and greet to here's some exercises for a couple of weeks where you get to know each other and build these, you know, self-speaking skills, and your listening skills go off the charts, because a lot of the exercises focus on how to build your listening skills. It's one of the most powerful skills, and it doesn't take a lot of money to develop your listening skill. Right. So there's a whole bunch of opportunities for people trying to bootstrap to just start doing something consistently for themselves. And then it can turn into bigger things.
There's a big difference between listening and active listening. How smart did that sound, Sam?
Yes. But the active listening part, I think, is reinforced during the exercises. You know, I'm trying to take the facetious, funny comment and make it serious. That's part of what I do here on the show. I make it unfunny. This is a comedy show. I make it unfunny. I do a comedy show every Sunday night. It's called Grand Theft World. And we try to make the news funny. And I think that comedy and free speech and entrepreneurism all go together. So,
yeah.
Don't mind Howie. He's a shit talker. But I love everything you do, Richard. I'm a big fan of what you do. I love your presentation. I love that you're helping people take advantage of just the tools that you've learned. And I don't think enough people do that. I don't think anybody takes, you know, the lessons they've learned in life and help others, you know, kind of ascend from where they are. And like, you know, you obviously went through a lot of shit. I went through a lot of shit, and we've been blessed to ascend. How much of that do you think can be learned, and how much of it do you really believe is like just genetics? Because there was a whole thing, I think you know, Johnny says it all the time about how, like, you know, willpower and drive is a genetic thing. That's what Carlin used to say. It's like Carlin always said, like, the will to work is genetic. But do you think that's true?
No, I think it's probably 98% malleable by the thinker. Willpower is a state of, so this is how I would teach it in the course. Willpower is like a battery. It needs to be recharged every now and then. Your environment is like a magnet. It's always on. So if you set up your magnet for success, when your willpower wanes, you rely on your environment to reinforce your focus. The ability to focus is something anyone can develop. Most people have abilities to think, talk, read, write, listen, all these things that can be valuable presentations to the public, but they don't know how to structure an offer. So just learning how to do a couple things, I think, is really the essence. And most of these things can be learned, because it's all about learning not to quit on yourself. And that's what all these success stories that anyone would talk about have to do, right? Through trials and tribulations. You have enough success to endure trials and tribulations and not get break out through the learning curve at the bottom. And then you continue to see your rewards. And once you know that about yourself, you can call upon that, you know, and Goggins talks about it, like your cookie jar. You store those cookies over here for when you need them. It's the same, but this is about knowledge of self and knowledge of environment. And if I can help people understand both of those things, their mind is going to synchronize with their environment. They're going to have objective reality synchronization that leads to happiness, because a lot of the mental illness is just people not thinking about reality at all. They're assuming that what they've been told is true, and that leads to a lot of pitfalls.
I think the genetic element, though, is just to have that impulse to even seek help, you know, to seek, you know, to try to, you know, self-improve. Some people just aren't born with that. That's what Carlin was talking about, I think.
Sure. I mean, there's people who are always going to reside in their quiet desperation because it's comfortable. And any type of growth is uncomfortable. It is awkward. You are going to fail. You're probably going to embarrass yourself to some degree. These things that we feel, right? But once you learn, oh, that's just the package that comes with the return of learning, I'll do that, right? And then people have a choice. But if they don't have this offer of, you know, if they think it's all genetic and they don't have an offer to evaluate the other side, like maybe they can change a lot of things about themselves that they are blaming on genetics, and they could use that blame successfully because they didn't have a method at their beck and call or a system of resources at their beck and call to alleviate those things. And then all of a sudden they experience a whole bunch of growth, and then they would say, oh, maybe there is a balance between genetics and, you know, just willpower to learn and taking information from your environment, organizing it and removing the contradictions to have a choice, decision, judgment, or some way you can take action to move forward.
Yeah. And I don't even think Carlin was saying it was all genetic. I think he was saying it's a combination of genetics and environmental factors. His sure. point was that he swam in the dirty river, that made him strong. The homeless man on the street, you know, if you had lived his life in his body, you would be homeless on the street as well.
No, that's a good, that's a valid point. And I used to,
it's not really a point though. It's so general. I mean, it's I think about it.
I've seen evidence of that dealing with people who were homeless. I would see them as homeless, but they're highly intelligent, could definitely hold down a job, and they were satisfied living the lifestyle that they were doing. So in my experience, there were, you know, cause I saw them as, oh, here's some, you know, here's some food here. You're a victim. They're like, no, dude, I chose to do this. I'm going through your garbage.
Yeah. We just talked about that on tinfoil. Yeah. There are some people that's just the choice they made. They prefer to be opt out of the system.
I mean, that's the most off the grid you'll get right there. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's super off the grid. Real quick, cause I don't want to hold you forever, Richard. I'm really thankful you came on our show today. You really, your class act, and I appreciate you. There's a lot of, I come from a very spiritual place. I have this theory, this belief that, you know, there's a lot of people out there that want to change the game, right? They're marching, they're protesting, they're doing all that. And there is sometimes that does work. That shows sign of solidarity that could make the elites kind of get nervous. But there's also this notion that, you know, this notion that you are born into this, and all these elements are conspiring to hold you down, and you're doing nothing to that you're in this place out of your say or your actions. And for me, man, like, I've been really studying this lately a lot, and it's that you can't change the game. You can only beat the game. And by beating the game adapts to you. So if enough people, if one guy beats the game, and I always talk about this, like Dane Cook discovered that on MySpace, you know, if you get enough followers, you could be like, you could have a connection, start selling out everywhere. And then, you know, Joe Rogan and the Death Squad came, and they were like, hey man, we're going to do raw, real podcasting, and we're going to reach people. And then Andrew Schultz came and changed that game to, we're going to do little clips and all this stuff. But the game adapts to the winners. And if enough people win, the game will always change to make it a little harder. And then people move out of, like, you know, I always think there's, in the spiritual way, there's just areas of wherever we live that are super haunted, right? And you're born into this haunted place. The first thing, let's say, like an NBA bass player, like you come from this very poor area, you get a chance to play in the NBA, and the first thing you do is you take you and your mother and you move out of that horrible area to a really nice area. So for me, it's like, is there any spiritual part of what you do? Is there a spiritual element that you think is important to changing the way you operate?
Well, I'd say definitely, and there's evidence of this, right? So the spiritual aspect is to think or not to think. That is the question. There's people who don't want to do any thinking, and there's people who are willing to think. And along with that comes, if there's a game going on and it's being dominated and rigged in a way, you can't defeat it against it, right? So Buckminster Fuller said, you can't, to change things, you don't fight against the existing model, you make a model that makes it obsolete. So you always have to depend on artistic creativity, all these things that spirituality and the soul channels, right? Soul is your consciousness expressing itself through breath. So the spirit and the soul are denied in the public schooling system, because it's all denied in order to make people into Clockwork Oranges. So if the people who made the Prussian PhD system and imported to America believed, they knew that people have a spirit and a soul, but if we don't treat that in the indoctrination and tell them it doesn't exist, they won't have the natural capacity to tap into it and escape the system. And I don't think the system had enough of me to break that. And I grew up in a good place around good people. So when I saw people doing wrong things and I had the skills to go write my ticket someplace else, I continued to do what was right through that whole situation. And I don't think most people can afford that morally or economically.
When you went through that situation, and you probably were in a situation where like, okay, I'm doing the right thing. The company is going to be, they're going to love me for this one.
And I thought I would at least keep my job, but yeah.
Yeah, then it 180s on you, and all of a sudden the guys you thought were going to be like, yeah, we're like, oh, you fucking asshole. You need to shut up and just go into your little corner. When that happened, were you just like, holy shit, I'm fucked. Well, it must have been like, I'm fucked here.
I would have been if it was the first time something like that happened in my career, but I was just coming off a stellar sales career, and then they found the reason to fire me to take my commission. And then I had another $10 million global site license with General Electric, and I worked for a startup AI company, and the CEO and the other guy wanted to step in. So I had had a couple close calls. So when I started interacting with this new company, I lived in a one-party state. I had recordings of everything from my interview all the way through them admitting all this stuff, all the way up through them terminating me, and I put that on the record in court. So it took a long time to do that process. I was caught off guard that they would act like that. And I really thought up until I didn't get fired till January 14th. So I blew the whistle November 4th or 5th. They didn't actually terminate me on paper to my knowledge till January 15th. I proved in court they ordered it the day on November 4th or 5th, whenever I told them that I was blowing the whistle. So I kind of believed in the system until they call and say, we're letting you go. And good luck and sorry about your whistleblowing, and we're not doing anything about it.
So crazy, dude.
It's just
so it was a hard lesson.
Well, EMC, yeah. EMC is was a big, especially in the 90s, man. EMC was pretty much, I worked for the company that we covered them, and we were in bed with them. We had investment banking relationships with EMC, and shit, they were huge. Right there with Microsoft and Sun Microsystems. They were one of the biggest.
Yeah, and I blew the whistle and 2003, and I ended up getting fired January 15th or whatever, 2004.
That's right when all of them were. That's the domino effect. You had MCI WorldCom. You had Tyco. You had the one in Buffalo with the brothers. Can't remember that. Telecom. It was one of the telecoms. But you had five or six companies, including Enron and Denny Kozlowski, when I say cooking the books, man, whoa. They were frying them, billions of dollars.
Yeah, he made Madoff look like a chump.
You know what's wild about Denny Kozlowski is when he got out of jail, I had moved to New York. This is a while ago, and I was bartending in Grand Central Station at Michael Jordan Steakhouse, and I'm talking, we were four or five deep every single day, and I'm bartending, and I look up. And I turn around to the bartenders. I said, you know who that is? I mean, we got people coming in all the time, sitting around the bar, you know, famous actors. And I said, and he goes, no, who's that? I go, that dude threw a party on an island one time and dropped about $50 million in a day. I go, that's Dennis Kozlowski. He must have just gotten out. And he was with another girl.
Yeah.
Lost some weight. But I'm like, I walked over and I started tabbing. I got his card. And I'm like, I looked at his card and I'm like, God damn, man, I wish I'd taken a picture of that till this day. But yeah, he came in and had a drink.
Well, that's good. We did time very near each other because I used to spend a lot of I used to work in the Helmsley building and right around Grand Central. So I spent a lot, like hundreds and hundreds of hours in the Campbell apartment, which is adjacent. Right.
I used to go there after I bartended at Grand Central. At Michael Jordan Steakhouse right there, right across from what was the Italian place right now? Seferine or I can't remember. But Campbell Apartments. That's where I'd end up. I'd always go over there after.
Now, Sammy, if you ever get to Grand Central, I don't know if it's still open, but Campbell Apartment, and then it was Carnegie Bar and Books, that Mark that owned it, owned those two places. And they were the swankiest spots. They had like live Sinatra singers. It was awesome back in the day.
It's still open. It's, I mean, Campbell Apartments goes back, what, 200 years? It's been there in Grand Central.
But they lost it for like 100 years. It didn't open until like 99 when they found it during a reconstruction. That this whole, it was an amazing find, I think.
Wow, you walk in, it kind of looks like the back of Richard's place. Got books and a little bar. It's dark. And
cigars and martinis.
Those were the days. I want to thank you so much for coming on. It was an honor to have someone like you. So your website is grandtheftworld.com. There you can find your autonomy.
Can I show you?
And all that stuff. Yeah. There we see it right there.
Well, let me go full screen. All right, so I got a Twitter. Traditionally, my information is at Tragedy and Hope because it's a history book, and I do have a website that has that curated history information. My current podcast is grandtheftworld.com, and the autonomy course is getautonomy.info. Sammy has a link. He can put it in the description. And we also have a marketing company, Autonomy Unlimited. And for people who are at that broke or less than zero point, go to Autonomy Agora Marketplace. There's a whole bunch of free stuff here that we've developed to help people bootstrap. So the website is marketplace.autonomyagora.com, and it's a one-stop shop for self-liberation. There's a whole bunch of courses by people you
love
guys probably
there. Those are all four great people.
Yeah, so critical thinking, parallel systems, crypto and finances, these are all like entryways into like the flagship course of autonomy, but these are good like bootstrap, do it now and get autonomy later.
I love it, man. Again, thank you for coming on. We'll make sure to include all those links in the, if you're the person who was emailing us could send us all the emails,
100%,
all the links. So Johnny can include in the description. Richard, thank you so much for coming on. Anytime, open door. We'd love to have you back whenever you got anything you want to push or you just want to chop it up. And we definitely got to get you back on Tinfoil Hat. I'd love to talk to you. And thanks again for coming on, brother.
Thank you, guys. This is an exhilarating conversation. And I'll see you guys Sunday night. Come get fact
sorry
up
for,
over,
Howie
over Grand Theft World.
Sorry for Johnny. Howie's shitty joke. Don't worry. He's still an open micer in New York. Don't worry about it.
Right, bye, guys. Catch you later. Peace.
All right. Thank you, Richard. Greatly appreciated. Always a pleasure to chop it up. And so, Howie, let's get into your picks. Let's hear them. Bang, bang, pow. Bang, pow.
Two picks, man. Banks have been getting crushed. Let's stay with the big banks. Stay away from the little ones right now. Either buy some XLF. I think it's trading around 32. XLF is a safe ETF. Got all the big banks in it. Or go out and buy yourself some Bank of America right now, man. Buy some BAC.
Nice.
Right.
Nice.
Guys, great episode. Really just top shelf. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Join us now where the winners get the real good stuff, the good shit, okay? The special stuff. They're on the Patreon. Patreon.com/CashDaddies. Check it out. Guys, also, if you're watching this on YouTube, subscribe. Share this. Tell all your friends about it. We love it. We love you. Thank you so much for being one of Howie's homies, a Patreon, a reader, whatever we call you today. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.